Okay, thank you for the opportunity to talk here. And today, I'd like to introduce one case study, which is environmental risk assessment of the insect-protected soybean with consideration of the presence of the wild soybean so in Japan. So before I talk about environmental risk assessment of the insect-protected soybean, I would like to overview the environmental risk assessment conducted in Japan, and then I'd like to talk about how Japanese regulatory system assess the biotech soybean product with the presence of the wild soybean. And then after that, I will explain what kind of the assessment actually conducted for the insect-protected soybean in Japan. So in Japan, the environmental risk assessment of the biotech-derived crops guided by the Cartagena Protocol and the Japanese domestic law. The each unique event requires an assessment for the effects on biological diversity. And in the Japanese law, there are three endpoints should be considered for the environmental risk assessment. The first point is weediness and invasiveness. The second point is production of harmful substances. And the last one is the potential gene flow to related species. So I will explain the detail of those three endpoints in the next slide. So the weediness and the invasiveness is defined as if the biotech plants itself compete with wild species and due to the escape from cultivation or growth spillage from during the transportation. So the second point, the production of harmful substances, is defined as if the biotech plants produce harmful substances, followed by the effect to the surrounding wild species, and then decrease the those populations. The last one is the potential consequence of the gene flow to related species. So this is defined as the biotech plants can cross with a wild species, and then if the transgene introgressed into the wild species, and also the consequence of the gene flow should be assessed. So regarding the first and second endpoint of the environmental risk assessment, the Mark McPherson has already presented in his slide, and the field or laboratory data for biotech soybean plants are used for the Japan environmental risk assessment. So I will talk about I will focus on the third endpoint about the potential consequence of the gene flow to related species. So when we consider the endpoint about the gene flow to the wild species, we need there are a few types of the concern which related to the biological process or a consequence of the gene flow. So as some of the speaker already mentioned that gene flow itself is not a risk. So gene presence in the soybean wild relatives or increasing the gene frequency in wild soybean is actually the natural biological process. So it is necessary to consider that in the end point should be that if the fitness or competitiveness of the wild soybean can be increased by the based on the result of the receiving the trade. So I briefly explained the wild soybean glycine soja. So glycine soja is considered the progenitor of the cultivated soybean, and the flowering time of these two species is offset, but that's overlap. So under the natural conditions, they can hybridize to form the viable hybrid progeny. And there are some literatures published and explain the studies that outcrossing rate between the glycine soja and soybean. And it is reported that the outcrossing rate is almost less than 0.01 to and up to 0.73. Even under the condition that the glycine soja and soybean plant cross proximately to one another. So this shows the distribution of the glycine soja, and the dark gray area is a distribution area. So the glycine soja are distributed to the China, Korea, Taiwan, and Japan. So as you can see the right side of the map, the glycine soja distribute almost overall area of the Japan. Okay, so based on the situation that the presence of the wild soybean in Japan, Japanese regulation system has already assessed the some biotech soybean crop. So Japanese regulation system has already assessed the some herbicide tolerant soybean and modified oil seed traits such as high oleic soybean, and those soybean products have been reviewed and concluded no adverse effect, and that's already deregulated and imported from US to Japan. And regarding the gene flow from cultivated soybean to wild soybean was assessed based on the following 3 points. So regarding the traits has already reviewed. So it is assumed that those traits are the neutral in the wild soybean. That means that there is no fitness increasing even in the wild soybean. And regarding the herbicide tolerant soybean in the ruderal habitats, herbicides are not applied. So even without a herbicide application, the herbicide tolerant trait doesn't give any advantage in the natural habitat. And also the altered oil content in the seed is not expected to increase the weediness or invasiveness of wild soybean. So when we consider the environmental risk assessment of the insect protected soybean, we need to assess the two points. The one is the hazard assessment, and the second one is the exposure assessment. So as the mark shows a very good calculator on the exposure level of the in Japan as an import country. So and it was revealed that exposure level in Japan is extremely low and negligible. So today I would like to talk about hazard assessment. So when we assess the hazard of the insect-protected soybean, we need to consider that if the IP trait could increase the weediness or invasiveness of the glycine soja if the trait were introgressed into the wild soybean. So to evaluate this point, we collected the information about what insect species feed on the glycine soja and how much damage is caused by the different insect species. And then if those damage actually control the glycine soja population and limit their potential weediness and invasiveness. So in order to evaluate those three points, we conducted two types of the studies in Japan and in US. The first study is observation of the leaf feeding damage by Leptoptera from natural populations of glycine soja in Japan. We visited the natural population of the glycine soja as shown as bottom left of the picture, and then conducted the observation of the observation to evaluate what kind of the species actually feed on the glycine soja and how much level of the feeding damage. And the second study is the kind of the growth chamber study to evaluate the defoliation we conducted a defoliation study of the glycine soja to determine the tolerance to leaf feeding damage. So this is a brief summary of the first study about on the observation of the feeding damage in Japan. We visited two areas of the Japan. So one is Ibaraki Prefecture, located in the middle of Japan, mainland Japan. And the second area is the Saga Prefecture, located in the southern island of Japan. And the observation was conducted for 3 years. And we conducted multiple populations of glycine soja. And we collected the information about plant defoliation and damage and the growth stage of the glycine soja population. We also collected the information about the plant community surrounding area of the glycine soja. So this is a result of the observation, and right three graphs is a result of the saga starting from top. The top is 2011 and 12 studies, and the left side shows the result of the Ibaraki Prefecture. So as you can see, the red color, this is the total insect damage. So the highest damage was observed in the Saga area in 2011. Even in the highest feeding damage, it was less than 30%. So the total feeding damage didn't exceed 30% across the year and across areas. And when we look at the individual insect species, so it is revealed that the Lepidopteran feeding shown as green line is almost close to the zero, and less than 2% across the year and across the areas. So as you may realize that the three representative species, the Orthopteran, Coleoptera, and the Leptopteran species are shown, and even when those three species so excuse me, the sum of the those three species feeding damage are not equal to the total feeding damage. So that means other insect species such as snail, slug, or some thrips or other disease are also caused damage against the grassy soja leaf. So it is also revealed that not only the major insect but also the other some minor insects or disease also cause damage to the grassy soja leaf. So this is a overview of the first study. So this is the study method, the second study about the defoliation study of the grassy soja. So we planted the grassy soja plant on the pot in the growth chamber and grow at the flowering, early flowering timing. And then at that timing, we conducted a mechanical defoliation by cutting the leaves of the grassy soja. We set the several types of the several levels of the defoliation stage, starting from 0, 10, 10%, 25%, 50%, and 100%. So after the treatment of the defoliation, we kept the growing the grassy soja by the maturity stage at the R7 growth stage, and then we evaluated the pot and the seed number per plant to determine how much the grassy soja has a tolerance to the defoliation. So this study is a kind of the mimic of the insect feeding study in order to determine the how much grassy soja has a compensation against the feeding study. So this is a result of the defoliation study of the grassy soja. So the right graph shows the seed number per plant, and the left one is the pot number per plant. So as you can see, the horizontal axis shows the defoliation level starting from 0, 10, 25, 50, and 100. And the y-axis shows the number of the pot or seed. So as you can see the graph, only at 100% defoliation, we could see the statistical difference in the pot number and the seed number. So that means the grassy soja plants has a strong ability to recover after the defoliation, which is evidenced by the grassy soja showing the no statistical difference in the both the pot and the seed production after the defoliation up to 50% when compared to the control plants. So this is the overall of the defoliation study. So based on the two studies, the observation of the wild population of the grassy soja and the defoliation study in the growth chamber, it was revealed that low insect feeding damage were observed. So even in the total feeding damage, it was less than 30%. And when we focused on the Lepidopteran feeding damage, the damage was less than 5% at the highest, so the average feeding damage level is almost negligible. And based on the defoliation study, we revealed that wild soybean compensates to the defoliation. The compensation to defoliation is high, and there is no decrease of the pod and the seed number even up to even under the 50% defoliation. So taken together, the results demonstrate the insect do not significantly limit the wild soybean population in Japan. So then we can say that the hazard of the insect protected soybean is negligible. So also the exposure part, the Japan is an import, not a cultivation country, and the environmental exposure is extremely low and negligible based on the calculation of the exposure level. So based on the hazard and the exposure assessment, we conclude that the environmental risk of the insect protected soybean is extremely low. So as a conclusion, the insects do not significantly limit the grassy soja populations in Japan. Therefore, any gene flow from IP soybean is not expected to alter the weediness or invasiveness. Okay. Thank you for listening. Ability of the soybean against the insect feeding. And it is reported that about 20% of the defoliation is kind of the 20% defoliation can impact to the seed and pod production of the soybean. And it is also reported that the early flowering stage is the most impact timing of the which may affect to the seed and pod production. So that's why we choose the early flowering timing for the defoliation for the our wild soybean study.
Yes. Curious, do you import potentially BT corn for feed via similar studies?
No, actually for BT corn, we didn't conduct this type of study because Japan doesn't have any wild relatives of the coin for corn. So that's why there was no concern about the gene pool. Yes. Yes. Yes, actually, so I think it's related to the. Sorry, I want to go back to the slide. So I think it's related to the second endpoint of the discussion about the harmful substance. Actually, we evaluated potential influence to the Japanese insect species, including non-target organisms, and. Based on some laboratory data, we explained there is no adverse effect to the Japanese insect. And also, when we consider the second point, we consider the exposure level. So, because Japan is an import country, even if the soybeans imported in Japan, the probability grow along the roadside or escape from the transportation is extremely low, so the exposure level to the Japanese insect also extremely low. So based on those points, we concluded no adverse effect for the Japanese insect species.
Are there any genetically engineered crops or fruits that Japan allows currently?
Excuse me, your question?
Are any GMOs that Japan allows to import?
Yeah, actually, Japan has already granted the import for many, many biotech crops. And actually, Japan is one of the most great importer of the biotech crop. So Japan actually granted many biotech corn products, soybean also, also some alfalfa or canola, many products.
I'm just curious, also used to restrict virus free Paya, ring salt resistant Paya from Hawaii.
Yes.
Do you allow that now?
Yeah, the papaya has already approved in Japan. Yes.
Thank you.